For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Fantasy NBA Today podcast.
What's happening, everybody? Welcome to a new week. Another week where I have neglected to put up the board behind me and relying on this extremely unreliable blur out the background situation. So I apologize for that. It's lame, I know, but it's fine. There's a Laker game happening tonight. I figured I'd throw crypto.com in the back. Welcome to the show. This is your Monday. It's the second week of the off season. Why is the blur look so bad today? And I thought it looked pretty good on Friday's show. Maybe it was just that my face is smaller. Can I make my head smaller? Yeah, that's slightly less obtuse. Ah, well, it is what it is. Anyway, I'm Dan Bespris. It's Fantasy NBA Today, a SportsEthos.com presentation. Quick shout out to the Hiroshima Carp. A bunch of people asked me today if this is a Cincinnati Reds hat. It's not. It's a Carp hat brought back from Japan by one of the other coaches on my kids' Little League team. So I figured I'd rock a Carp hat today. Weird topic on today's show, and we're going to talk a bit about the fantasy or the reality playoffs as we kind of muscle our way through. But we'll save that towards the end. Today's topic is both a numbers and a gut feel topic. And it is effectively the question of when do you ride a hot player? But not just any player. And those that watch throughout the regular season, you guys remember that on a number of our Friday shows when we were going through kind of like the week in review stuff, I had a page that I called the Stream While Hot Club, which were effectively guys that were not necessarily guaranteed to be full season fantasy values. Some of them did turn out to be either right on the borderline or just above it. But guys that could go on medium length lava hot stretches where to say, oh, throw it out, felt sort of flippant and short-sighted. And frankly, from my own standpoint, what would I call myself? Because I do that sometimes. It's lazy. It's lazy analysis by me. How did I end up getting to that point is the first thing I want to cover. And then where do we go from there is the next thing I want to cover. Although the first thing I want to cover is why this thing is not properly blurring the background. Let's see if I can pull this thing off the side of the bed and maybe it'll blur better. Is that any better or is that worse? I didn't fix it at all, did it? Ah, well. All right, so I piled a whole bunch of crap up on the floor for nothing. You guys got to see a comforter come in and out of focus for a second. So back to the point here. And those that are listening on the recorded side, you're getting a very bad start to a podcast. Actually, everywhere you're getting a bad start. How did I end up in this place? Well, as someone who predominantly plays and extols the virtues of Games Cap Roto, guys that are hot hands have the ability to hurt you more than they help. What I mean by that is, I'm going to try to slow it down just for a second, someone like Jalen Green is a great example of this. Jalen Green finished at number 145 on a per-game basis this season. 145. He played in every single game for the Rockets this year, which is damn impressive. But so, you know, by totals ranks, he ends up being higher than that and blah, blah, blah. Per game, 145 is not an everyday guy. But well documented that his month of March was nuts. So even if you just looked at like the last 2 months, which is basically, you know, now back to the trade deadline, he was number 72. And then in the month of March, he was like a top 40 guy. But over the entire season, he wasn't. And over the final like week or two, I think, of the regular season, he went back to sort of not being all that great again. Where did he? There, he was number 180 in April, basically. Oops. So it was one colossal month for Jalen Green, which makes him the easiest player to use in this example because he was pretty damn bad in Ninecat for 5 of the 6 months this year and a must-start in every format juggernaut first, second rounder, basically, for like 3-4 weeks right in the middle of the season. So why is a player like that someone that, for me, for Dan personally, a player that I can't stand on the fantasy side? Why is that someone that I just say no? Well, because in Games Cap Roto, you get everything that they do all season long goes into your bucket. And so if you're using Jalen Green in October, November, December, January, beginning of February, you're accruing all of these negative impact stats. He's doing more to harm than help over that run. Yes, in the month of March, he finally now starts moving the boulder forward before then again in April, letting the boulder roll back over his face. In games cap, you don't want a guy who plays 82 games at a top 150 clip. It's not helpful. We've talked about this before. The math just tells you on a guy like that, they're doing more harm than good. It's very straightforward. Over the entire season, what did I say he was? 145 for the season and 180 those last 2 weeks. 145. He was a positive in scoring at about 20 points per game. He was a positive in threes at 2.5. For a wingy guard, slightly above average in rebounds, about average in assists, sub-average in steals, sub-average in blocks, significantly sub-average in field goal percent. Got his free throw number up to about average, and then turnovers was a little bit sub-average as well. So, yeah, more harm than good over an entire length of a season. So when you get a player like that, and again, this is not meant to just pick on Jalen Green. I just think he's a really nice example to use here because the time of the year where he was fantasy playable in a games cap format was very obvious a bracket around it. You don't get that kind of easy to analyze chunk for a lot of these guys. So then, as an analyst, it started to become simpler for me to just say guys like Jalen Green are not worth the time. Because my goal in this podcast, since day one, has always been, how do I simplify fantasy basketball for the people that are watching with us? How do I make it so that you can do the least amount of work possible, in addition to listening to this podcast, of course, and still succeed? It's a lot of work to try to figure out exactly when all of these stream while hot guys are actually streamable. You know, just to break off for a second, a tangential thought that I think actually will shine some light on this. These guys, at the end of the season, tend to fall somewhere in what we'd referred to over the last, I don't know when the hell we started doing it, 3-4 months ago, as the doesn't matter group. A lot of them fall into that doesn't matter range, which is like between 105 and 150, 160. For a really long time, and I mean, we can play the game where we just point and say the names, and I'll give you most of these guys, because these are the dudes that go on hot runs to push themselves up into the playable zone, and then go on cold runs and they fall back out of it. Names that I would say are in that group: Bobby Portis is in this chunk. Let's go through some of the names here. Naz Reid, prior to the injury to Cat, was very much in this chunk. Who else was in that range? I guess some of them fall maybe a little bit farther down the board. Denny Avdija was in this group. PJ Washington was in this group.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Keldon Johnson, you could probably throw in that mix. Obviously, Jalen Green, who we just talked about, was in this group. Malik Monk was one that we've talked about on the show before. RJ Barrett, who's much deeper down the list. Jeremy Sohan, also, who's deeper down the board. Ivica Zubac, kind of a big man. You don't see that many of that type, but you know, we've seen enough of Zubac to know that over time, and he's actually above this threshold, like right, he's basically a top 100 guy. But it's that same thing where guys go on heaters, guys go on cold spells, and for some of them, you're like, this is just not really worth my time. For a lot of those types of players on the Roto side, I've found that they are not worth my time, because with Roto, you're trying to maximize every little games cap game. Now, yes, obviously there are moments where someone like a Bobby Portis, who we just talked about, if Giannis is out, or if anybody on that team was out, he was a play. And that's part of what got him to this mark. But there were stretches, even when the Bucks were healthy, that Portis was putting up decent fantasy numbers when he just was hot for a week or two. And such is the case for a lot of these guys. Not as much for Jalen Green, because his seems to just be the month of March. But for a number of the names we just mentioned, they go in and out of these stretches, with or without injuries around them. So we want to discuss them independent of the injury side. Yes, obviously, Naz Reid was a full go once the starting power forward on his team was hurt for a month and a half. Yes, obviously, Bobby Portis is a go when he bumps into the starting lineup when Giannis is out. That type of stuff, easy decisions. But what about when they are in that reserve role that lands them in the 120, 140, 160 range, whatever they turn out to be here over the span of an entire season? How do we handle it? I would argue that on the Roto side, we've been handling it right. Someone like Bobby Portis, if you played him every single day in a Roto league, he would have been just fine. Wouldn't have really helped your team. Wouldn't have really hurt your team. If you were falling behind in games played, totally reasonable guy to throw in there. And he finished the season at 105-ish, like that range, including the games where he was filling in for an injured Giannis or an injured whoever. And if you pull those out, he drops a round or two back into that kind of no man's land or doesn't matter land that we've talked about. So most days when the Bucks are healthy, Bobby Portis was not a Roto games cap play. When he was hot, he was. And when someone was injured, he was. If you're a brilliant DFSer and you know exactly when the matchups are lighting it up, or Portis has had two or three good games in a row and you're thinking, okay, he's on a heater now, I'll just try to ride it. Okay, maybe you're a better daily player than I, which would not be all that hard. I'm not that great at DFS. For as much success as I've had over the years in full season fantasy, DFS is just not my forte. Okay, fine. You're on your own with that stuff. But if you're asking me on the Roto side, hey, should I play Bobby Portis today? And you're like, and I ask you, okay, which stars are in for the Bucks? And you say, well, Dame, Middleton, Giannis, Brooke Lopez, they're all in. I'd say probably not. Because odds are, if you're just playing the simple odds game, when that team was healthy, more often than not, Portis put up a line that was not inside the top 100. It's a gray area, I know, but something that assists your Roto 9-cap team more than it just sort of place holds or even hurts a little bit. Don't we're not going to get into punting because that's a different part of this discussion. But where I really wanted to focus today, which is a silly thing to say when you're already 14 minutes into a show, people are like, well, what the hell have you been talking about? Well, I wanted to give you guys a little bit of background on how I got to my previous stance, and then a little bit of chat on how we're going to get to a slight tweak of our previous stance. So the previous stance for me was pretty simple. No matter what league I was in, no matter where I was going, I was basically going to dodge these types of players. By the way, it's really unfortunate that the blurring that's happening on the screen has taken my ears out. Maybe if I put the hood on. There you go. I got a hood over a hat. And now that's going to force the screen to know. There we go. See, there's Dan's ears. This is a weird podcast, but I want people to be able to see the sides of my face. Even if the hood now starts to blur. It's the weirdest show I've ever done. I got to go back to putting the board up behind me. So the thing I wanted to tweak a little bit is that on the head-to-head side, and I'm trying really hard to do a better job of this over the last 1 to 2 seasons, which is, people said to me, and I think they were right, Dan, you can clown on head-to-head if you want, but you still have to cover it. I thought, damn, you know what? They're right. I would still encourage all of you guys to play Roto. And I'll probably do a show on it at some point this offseason, and it might be soon. But at the end of the day, not all of you are going to actually do or try Roto. I have to accept the fact that the vast majority of you are still going to play in your head-to-head league, even if you guys agree with me that the Roto side is more fair. So we need to have 2 distinct strategies as we attack these leagues types. They're just not the same. We're not in an era anymore where you can play Roto and head-to-head the same way. At least, Mel, you know, if we start to get a head-to-head games cap as more of the proper settings, but I think we're years away from that. The big box sites setting it up where their head-to-head leagues have games cap. We can do it in private leagues, and I think we should, but the Yahoo public ones, like, they're not going to have a head-to-head games cap in those. I don't think anytime soon, maybe ever. I wish they would, but I don't think they will. So we still have to tailor our discussion to whatever the sort of standard default settings are on the head-to-head side when we talk about head-to-head strategy. And head-to-head strategy is heavily about maximizing games played. Yes, obviously, the first 6, 7 rounds, whatever, in your draft, you want to make sure you're getting these really good players, and later on in the draft, you're shooting the moon. You want these guys with maximum upside. But as you work your way through the season, understanding that a player like even Jalen Green, much as I will continue to malign Jalen Green on these shows, on the head-to-head side, by totals this year, he was number 95 because he was healthy. He was a disaster for your field goal percent. And if you're punting field goal percent, suddenly he becomes a very valuable asset, maybe even on the per game side, but definitely on the total side. And some of that's because guys go on hot runs. In fact, it's worth pointing out that basically everyone in the NBA has hot runs and cold runs. It's just more obvious for a player like a Jalen Green or a Bobby Portis or a Malik Monk or a PJ Washington or a Jeremy Sochan or an RJ Barrett. Because when they're on a hot run, they're good enough to play. And when they're not, they're not. A lot of the bigger name guys we talk about, I mean, take anybody from like the top 50 up, they go on hot and cold runs too. CJ McCollum was a top 20 fantasy player for like the first 2.5 months this year. That was a long hot run. He came back down to earth. He was more like a top 70 guy the last 2 months. So these guys have hot runs. They have cold runs. We just sort of don't really notice them as much because the whole way through, their games are startable. With these other guys, with the Portises, with the RJ Barretts, whatever, when they're cold, they're disasters. So we're like, oh, this guy's not good anymore. And then they get hot, and it's like, oh, they're good again. So it's the guys that, the stream while hot dudes, the ones that we're talking about here, these are the guys that jump above and below the fantasy cut line, which for 12 teamers is around the edge of the top 100, give or take a little bit, depending on how competitive the league is. They fall up and below. They jump back and forth across it on a month-to-month, week-to-week, whatever kind of basis. So then you're left with a few choices. Try to, what I refer to over the last few years as get cute with it, play the guy when they're hot, and don't when they're not, or just live with it, which is hard to do when we're, you know, frantic move-making types in the fantasy space. You want to be adding and dropping every night. So when one of these types of guys runs cold, there's a sort of built-in desire to move on from it. You know, an interesting example of this is John Collins, who I preached patience and patience and patience and patience and patience. Then after like 2 months of him being bad, I was finally like, fine, we can move on. And then Utah shut everybody down and he got really, really good again. So oopsies. But he was also hovering in that like 110 range and slowly falling because on a week-to-week basis, he was like 140 every week. I'm thinking, this just isn't good enough. But if you got the hot run, the cold run, is there going to be another hot run coming? You have to kind of budget that stuff in your mind. And so for the first 4 months this year, John Collins was not a daily play in 9-cat roto, but was a daily play in 9-cat head-to-head. Because even though he wasn't great, he was doing enough, and there was always this option, this possibility that a guy like that could then have a good run to push himself back up into the startable range. I think we need to figure out, and I don't know that we're going to do it necessarily on today's podcast, but I think what we need to figure out for this strategy is a way to kind of plant our flag in a more concrete barrier. But it's hard to know. Because for some of these guys, they move into a new location with new roles, a la PJ Washington in Dallas, and you don't really know how the fantasy game is going to translate. Jeremy Sochan is probably a good example of this. He's number 176 per game on the year in 30 minutes a night. He got plenty of opportunity on that Spurs team, and he's just not good enough to be a fantasy option. So that's the kind of guy that even when he runs hot on the head-to-head side, I'm still probably not going to do anything with it. Because for someone in the 170s, 180s, whatever it is, like a, you know, basically someone that you'd refer to as a top 200 fantasy play, in a 12-team league, the bad games are coming, and you know they're coming, even when he's running hot. He had like 2 to 2.5 weeks where he ran warm this year, and the rest of the season, he was pretty bad. Fantasy-wise, again, this is not a discussion of whether a guy is good or not in real life. Fantasy-wise, no. What about someone more like Jalen Green, who finished at 145? Is that someone that you could take a shot on when they get hot? The answer is probably yes. So the barrier falls, in my eyes, somewhere in between 145 and 175. Now, again, Jalen Green's a bad example because he was terrible for 5 months and he was insanely good for one. Most of these guys are going to have peaks and valleys, pluralized peaks and valleys with an S on the end. Jalen Green had big valley, big peak, and then a little bitty valley at the end of the year. That's a much easier one. Obviously, you play him when he's hot. You don't when you don't. But for a lot of these guys, Malik Monk, by the way, who's right behind Jalen Green in season ranking at 147, he was bad to start the year. Then he got hot for a month. Then he was bad for a month. Then he got hot for a month. And he went back and forth the whole damn season. Startable for a month, not startable for a month. These are guys that in Roto, I'm still hesitant to make a play on them. Because if you catch him at the wrong stretch, if you're like, oh, you know, Malik Monk, he's running hot right now. I'm going to drop him into my Roto lineup. And then he gets one hot game and you're like, great, I got this all figured out. And then it's one bad game and you're like, oh no, what do I do now? If the next one's bad, you wasted three games. You hurt yourself more than you helped. So that's why I don't really like these types of guys in Roto. In head-to-head, if you accidentally play a few of his bad games, it doesn't. Nothing you do in head-to-head really hurts you all that much, other than a zero. I mean, yes, obviously someone could have...
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Like a 9-turnover game or a game where they shoot 3-for-19. And yes, those are marked and obvious painful things on a week-to-week basis. But Malik Monk going out and putting up 14 points on 4 out of 12, like, yeah, not good, but you still add a few things to your weekly ledger, and then if you wanted to go somewhere else the following week, you could still do it. Doesn't really break you in a way where a few of those bad games in Roto, you're like, you're kicking yourself because you could have gone some other direction. Something that's not going to hurt your percentages for the year instead of just for a week. You have more play area on the head-to-head side. You got more wiggle room. And I think, again, that barrier near 150 actually makes a lot of sense. The guys that ran hot and cold outside of that mark were worse, were bad, much more often than they were good. You were much more likely, even on the head-to-head side, to catch them on a week where they soiled your fantasy team than you were to get a good one. And yes, if you parsed individual players, you could say, okay, well, like Malik Monk, he seemed to be hot and then cold for about a month at a time. And Jalen Green had 5 good months and then 1 bad one, or 4 bad, flip it, 4 bad ones, 1 good one. Like, some of these guys were easier to read. Bobby Portis was not easy to read. He got hot for 3 days, cold for 2, hot for 2, cold for 3, that kind of thing. Giannis was out, he'd go super hot for a week. RJ Barrett is so awful at the percentages. He's another one where I don't think I'm taking a chance on that dude regardless. So the end of this all is to say, you know what? I had a stream while hot club on this podcast, and I don't think that was even specific enough. I think what we need is the stream while hot club head-to-head edition. We had the probably don't bother with most of these guys on the Roto side, but maybe there's a stream while hot club even in Roto type of guy, which would be Jalen Green in March. And then you've got the stream while hot guys if you have the biggest stones in fantasy sports. That's RJ Barrett. Or Sohan. Jeremy Sohan as well. That's the one thing that I hate about all this fantasy analysis is that no matter how much we do, we can do a little bit more. And we can dig a little bit deeper in strategy. Yes, you could get in there, you could get into the weeds, and you could try to figure out each individual game. And if you want to do the DFS angle on this, have at it. But Fantasy NBA Today is always going to be about trying to simplify the game. And to simplify this particular topic, you take these guys where you have enough of what we've called before portfolio. Like, we know that in full starters minutes, Jalen Green is X. We know in full starters minutes, Bobby Portis is X. Actually, in full starters minutes, Bobby Portis is like a top 75 guy. In 25 minutes, Bobby Portis is X. In starters minutes, PJ Washington is X. We know these things about these guys. So then when you see how many minutes they're getting, unless there's a big role change, we can have a pretty good idea of what they're going to be after 6 months of basketball is done, and then make calls on what the hot and the cold stretches during the season equate to. Quick check of what's been going on in the NBA. Interesting. Here's the simplification of the century. Every single home team won their playoff opener. How's that for weird? I think I saw the stat that the last time that happened was 2013. So it's been 11 years, but every single home team won. Cleveland, the defense showed up, and Orlando's going to have a problem. They got to figure out how to score. I didn't see anything in that ball game to make me think they're going to score a ton better in the next one, but they're also not going to shoot 33%. I don't care how good defensively. They also shot just 63% at the free throw line. So, yeah, there's probably a bit of an over-adjustment coming to that ball game. They're not playing tonight, though, so I'd rather not focus on that one. Phoenix is at Minnesota. Wolves are favored by 3. Indies in Milwaukee. Bucks favored by 1.5. That's not right. That's tomorrow. Sorry, guys. Orlando and Cleveland are playing tonight. Cleveland is favored by 5 with a total of 203 after that obscenely low last one. Final score, final total was 180 on a total of 206.5. Interestingly, the pace was not the problem. The problem was that no one could make a bucket to save their lives. Like, really nobody could make a bucket. We've done this kind of fuzzy math game before. The teams combined for 51 free throws, which is kind of high, but not obscene. 29 turnovers, and then they shot 33 and 44%, respectively. If you see the turnovers come down, the free throw percent come up, and the field goal percent almost undoubtedly is going to have to be a little bit better in game two. I would probably lean slightly towards the over and a tighter ball game. So slight leans to Orlando, maybe a slightly better lean to the over in that one, if you're looking at, you know, whatever they're doing tonight. Middle game tonight is Philly at New York, Knicks by 6 with a total of 204. Philly led early, and then the Knicks just sort of clamped down. They out-rebounded the Sixers 55-33. This is another one where, again, you know, you had 215 was the final point total on it. And oddsmakers are like, yeah, we don't care. We're going to keep it at 204. The first one was 208. They actually brought it down between ball games. Joel Embiid is questionable. Tyrese Maxey is also questionable. I think they probably both play. So why would oddsmakers look at this game and say, well, we saw 215 points on a total of 208, and yet we're going to make game two lower? Well, looking at some of the stuff in between the lines, the Knicks getting 1,000, I think was the, yeah, checking the numbers here. I'm being told it's 1,000 offensive rebounds is something that could and should level off a little bit. So they ended up with just a vast array of extra possessions that if you get a defensive rebound and the shot clock resets all the way to 24 instead of 14, you're going to see the number of possessions decrease. One thing to think about, do the Knicks shoot better? 40%, 44% between the two sides. 50 free throws, but they didn't make a lot of them in this one. Only 22 turnovers was a relatively low number there. That's what oddsmakers are looking at. They also might be wondering if anybody on Philly doesn't play. Maxey had a good ball game. Embiid did not. Embiid is also not really healthy. Although Brunson had a bad ball game. You know, I think the total is probably relatively accurate. Again, assuming the defensive rebounding is better, so possessions take longer, you see fewer of them. Not really a place I wanted to voyage. And I wouldn't touch the side, because again, we don't know who's playing for the Sixers, even though you probably have to assume they're both in. Lakers, Nuggets, Denver is favored by 7. Denver was favored by 6.5 in game one. Odds makers didn't see anything to move them off their position. Total of the first game was 226.5. It's down to 224 here. After the teams combined for 217, I'm looking at this, and you know the only thing that jumps out to me is that Nuggets really didn't get any free throws, but on the flip side, they only committed 4 turnovers for the ball game, and just clobbered the Lakers in offensive rebounds as well. So everything that happened in game one, it felt like a lot of stuff was just going to sort of balance itself. Lakers shot the 2-ball well around the rim. They shot the 3-ball horribly, but they made their free throws. Nuggets didn't shoot the 2 all that well. Got a lot of offensive rebounds. 102 shots the Nuggets took. Lakers took 79. And a lot of that is, again, offensive rebounds and a lack of turnover. So, yeah, you say, okay, well, turnover should be higher for the Nuggets. So then fewer shots, maybe fewer points, but also you'd think free throws are going to be higher for the Nuggets. So that then makes the point total go up a little bit. And you're like, all right, well, D'Lo's probably not going to shoot 6 for 20 again, and Lakers are going to make more than 8 3-pointers. That would make you think the total would go up. So there's all these things that I think probably knock each other around. I don't have a great feel for what the total looks like in game two. I would assume The Lakers shoot the three a little bit better, and so I would lean ever so slightly to more points than game one, but game one was 217. Was it going to be seven more points? That's a pretty good chunk, especially if the Nuggets commit like 10 turnovers. But do they get a few more foul shots? I think the total on this ball game is scary. I would still maybe lean slightly to the under because the Lakers have a tendency to walk it up in the second half. But, you know, it's also a game where you could see teams getting hot a little bit and kind of running with each other. So I'm not a big fan of that one. We've also seen the Nuggets pull away from the Lakers late every single game they've played. Seven, I think, is the right number on the side. So if you're looking at the three games today, I think you probably see Orlando a bit more competitive and slight lean to the over in that one just because they shot so terribly in the last one. Philly, I have no idea because we need to find out who's playing for them. I wouldn't touch that game at all. I think this side is pretty accurate in Lakers-Nuggets, and I think you could look at that total and make about 15 different arguments, and I think they'd all be somewhat accurate. So that's what you're looking at for tonight on the NBA slate. I have two posts in the chat room. Dan, can you please do some Dynasty content? And Dan, can you please do some WNBA content? So first of all, the answer soft on both of those. So Dynasty, the answer is a soft no. We'll probably have some people on the show that can talk Dynasty. It's not going to be me giving all of the info. It's going to be me asking questions to get it. So Skeeter, your question is, yeah, we'll have some Dynasty content because we'll talk NBA draft. We'll talk things of that nature. We'll talk to Mark Camaro, who runs the Dynasty division at Sports Ethos. We'll talk to other Ethos people that that handle Dynasty things. So yes, we'll have some stuff on that front where we get into players of different ages and, you know, who you might want to buy into in the offseason. WNBA fantasy, we will not. I am not going to pick up an entire other sport that it's too much. It's too much. We are, however, at the website going to have a little bit of WNBA content going. It's just not likely to be... Oh, you know what? It is going to be fantasy side. I think I have confirmation that we actually have a WNBA fantasy league starting through Sports Ethos, and we'll have some podcast content on that. It just won't be this show. So stay tuned for that. I don't want to make any big announcements yet because I don't think we've worked out all the details, but we'll have some WNBA stuff via a different podcast here at sportsethos.com. That will be that for today's show. Should be some good playoff basketball games tonight. I think we'd have a lot of fun with that. We'll do another off-season episode tomorrow. And I'm going to get the board set up behind me again because this whole thing of me disappearing and reappearing, not my favorite. Not my favorite. Bad look for me. Ah, well, you guys stuck with me. Hey, folks that are watching live on Twitter, which is most of you that are watching live these days, make sure to subscribe to iTunes or Spotify or wherever you can get a podcast in the more traditional sense, because not all of our shows will be live on video during this offseason. I'm trying my best to do it right now because my kids are still in school or camp or something, so I have a little bit of time in the morning to chunk these out, but as we move towards summertime, they won't all be. So please do find a way to subscribe that's not just on social or YouTube. That way you guys don't miss any shows in the offseason. I'm at Dan Vespers, by the way, on social. For Sports Ethos, this is Fantasy NBA Today. Have a lovely Monday, friends, and a happy Passover to those who celebrate later on tonight as well. Matzah time is upon us. See you guys tomorrow.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.